Ladies and gentlemen, welcome and thank you for joining today's Market Surveillance Committee meeting to adopt the opinion of CC Debbie. Please note that all lines are muted. If you have a question, please press pound 2 on your telephone keypad and we will address you as soon as possible. I would like to begin today's meeting and turn the call over to Benjamin Hobbs, Chair of the Market Surveillance Committee. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Marvin, for starting the call off. With me, I have Jim Bushnell and Scott Harvey from the Market Surveillance Committee. And then in the room, ISO staff that we have here are, I think I heard Greg Cook, Brad Cooper, Shami Davis. Anybody else?
Brittany Dean.
Okay, Brittany, thank you for joining us. The agenda today is to consider the adoption of an opinion on the commitment costs and default energy bid enhancements proposal. But before we do so, as we always do on these calls, we invite public comment on other issues, any statements or comments. If it's a comment concerning the CCWA proposal itself, I would ask that you wait until after I summarize the opinion, and Dr. Harvey is going to be moderating the subsequent discussion. And at that time, there'll be ample opportunity for stakeholder discussion of CCWA. I'd also like to preface this by saying the MSC definitely welcomes public comment and input. We're stimulated by that and has helped our opinions in the past. However, this is we're not running a stakeholder process ourselves, and especially with a proposal as complex as this and with a compressed time schedule the last month or two, we did not try and we're not able to respond to every stakeholder concern that was raised. And so we have focused our comments and opinion on those things that we thought that we had particular insights to contribute. But at any rate, at this point, I'd like to ask, Operator, if you could check if there's anybody who would like to make comments or ask a question at this time on subjects other than CCWA.
All right. And once again, you can do that by pressing pound 2 on your telephone keypad. And we don't seem to be receiving any questions or comments at this time.
Okay. I'm sure people are keeping their powder dry. Okay, so I'm going to start off by quickly summarizing the opinion and then turning to Scott and Jim to see if they have more comments that they would like to add before we open it up for discussion with the stakeholders. So at any rate, ever since MRTU was being designed, there was a keen awareness that market power could be exercised through inflated commitment cost offers, which could wind up driving up energy prices, bid cost recovery, or exceptional dispatch payments, and it could also hurt market efficiency by causing dispatch to deviate from least cost dispatch. So there have been procedures from the very beginning to address this possibility. In designing these procedures, the ISO has attempted to balance the need to prevent the exercise of market power when and where it might occur, with the need also to give resources the flexibility to bid their costs. In general, mitigation approaches have an assumption that the ISO can estimate the true costs of all or most resources, and as we witnessed in the winter of 2013-2014, because of lags in the procedures or missing costs such as opportunity costs, it's definitely possible to have distortions in the bids that they would be over-mitigated, and that could result in distortions and inefficiencies in dispatch and perhaps even threats to reliability. So this trade-off between the risk of under mitigation, false negatives versus over mitigation, false positives, and the consequences for market efficiency have been definitely high interest to the ISO and to the MSC since then. And we've written about an opinion, one opinion per year since pre-MRTU on the topic in response to both ISO proposals and actually FERC requirements that we address certain issues such as the efficacy of the three pivotal supplier test. It is time once again to revisit this. In these opinions, we have strongly advocated the use of dynamic tests that will detect market power as a function of system conditions. We have strongly advocated the use of estimates of opportunity costs to include those costs in reference prices. And finally, the most up-to-date indices. The ISO has responded to these in this and other and previous proposals. This proposal is also responding to the increasing need for flexibility in light of the expansion of the real-time market to other balancing areas through the EIM, where there may not be published gas indices or there are different generation mixes. And also, as DMM's reports have shown, and of course as we experienced 2014, there seems to be more gas price volatility in the West. So this has driven this revisiting of the commitment cost offer mitigation procedures that has culminated in this proposal. So this is a comprehensive reform of rules. Addressing calculation of costs, addressing identification of non-competitive paths, addressing the definition of when resources significantly can affect prices on those paths through these dynamic tests. And in general, we're pleased to see the ISO proposing a dynamic test. There's definitely a lot of devilish details. There are unknowns in terms of how well this may actually perform in mitigation or in terms of the risk of over-mitigation. So there will definitely have to be adjustments in the future that the ISO will need to be open to. But we do think, in general, this is a step in the right direction. The complications in this proposal come up in defining competitive versus non-competitive constraints, defining what constitutes a significant impact on those constraints, and the definition of reference levels. The proposal sorts or will mitigate three types of resources, or sort them into three bins that will trigger mitigation. One bin is those resources that impact minimum online constraints, which will remain even with the contingency modeling enhancements that that will be implemented. Resources that significantly impact non-competitive binding constraints, and then finally a new category, which are resources that appreciably impact non-competitive, non-binding constraints, where the resources output is large enough such that it's clear that they were needed to satisfy that constraint. And that's a big complication compared to previous local market power mitigation procedures. So as I've said, we believe that an approach like this should be implemented. In our opinion, we've addressed some of the aspects and make some suggestions for implementation that should be considered, especially if certain issues arise. I'll briefly summarize those now. So two of the recommendations are for alternative implementations that might have some advantages, depending on what happens. We're not saying that they should be implemented now, but kept in mind. One is to simplify market power tests on binding constraints by combining the tests for energy and commitment cost offers, which would be more efficient computationally and could reduce false positives. Right now, there are separate tests which are a bit more complicated, and there are not unreasonable reasons offered for that, but in case the complications are causing problems, a more conservative combined implementation could be considered. The second alternative implementation concerns the possibility that you could do after-the-fact mitigation of commitment cost offers in certain circumstances, basically where the resources offered does not affect energy prices and only affects bid cost recovery or exceptional dispatch costs that are recovered. And that's worth doing if it turns out that the complexity of the present system is such that the additional computational efficiency might be worthwhile. We make some additional conclusions, but as I said, this very complicated proposal and the very diverse set of concerns that were raised, we're not able to address them all, so we're focusing on a subset that we think we have more useful things to say about. Let's see. We support a transition to commitment cost reference levels that can be based on negotiated values or cost information the suppliers have updated, similar to what other ISOs have done in the last half decade. And in time, as suppliers are better able to reflect their actual costs, including opportunity costs and reference prices, it'll be appropriate to reduce the general mitigation threshold for commitment costs from 25% above those costs to 10% above those costs. It's used for other resources. And we definitely support the ISOs and the Department of Market Monitoring's efforts to base offer price mitigation and the most up-to-date gas price information when that's available and sufficiently reliable. And that's, of course, a very important condition in other balancing areas where there aren't as well-developed gas price indices. The ISO has proposed that the default caps on commitment cost offers would rise from 200 to 300% automatically after a year and a half, unless the ISO files with FERC otherwise to defer that increase. And, of course, there's a lot of discussion of that. We feel that that's a reasonable default rather than requiring a new stakeholder process in order to raise them. There are advantages and disadvantages either way, but we think that our prior expectation is that this will work well enough that these can be safely raised, and so this will likely avoid a stakeholder process, although not definitely so. Anyway, there's a lot of detail in the opinion on these recommendations on our previous opinions on commitment cost mitigation. And at this point, I'd like to ask Jim and Scott whether you would like to add anything to my summary or want to make any additional comments. Jim?
No, I think you did a good job. We can move on to the discussion.
Okay. Scott?
Well, I thought I'd add on a couple of points. You know, there's some things that stakeholders brought up that we didn't cover, or we covered in the opinion, but maybe we didn't go into as much detail as we might have if we'd understood the concerns, because the comments were coming in sort of as we were at the last stages of posting the opinion, so it made it a little bit difficult. And one of the concerns that a number of market participants and stakeholders raised was the potential, you know, the double thresholds, that on the one hand we have the 110, 125% thresholds that exist for applying mitigation, and then we have an additional volatility threshold to the extent that the actual gas cost exceeds the index cost that they'd be able to recover that. So there's a potential for offer prices, if the gas price was 120% of the index, that you'd be able to pass through 110 times 120. And you know, there is a potential for tightening the thresholds down the road with a better design, and the CAISO does propose to reduce the basic mitigation threshold margin from 125% to 110. But we are initially in this situation where we've got this threshold, but even if the costs go up to 130%, they can only pass through 125. And we've trying not to make this worse than it is today, and other ISOs that have this ability to pass through the higher gas costs, some of them have moved to smaller mitigation margins, but they also allow the market participant to reflect the entire increase in gas cost in the reference price, whereas we're only going part way. So, I mean, there is a decision that can be made after some more experience that people don't want to change too much too quickly. But I think going to a design in which the actual increase in gas costs can be passed through in the reference price allows you to tighten up some of the other margins. And if you look at the MISO NCA margins and the NISO in-city margins, they're defined in a way that doesn't vary from day to day based on the gas price, and there are a certain number of dollars or whatever. So you could end up with tighter margins in the long run if we go to a more flexible approach. But we aren't going all the way to that flexible approach because we've got these thresholds in there that even if the gas costs go up by a lot, it's going to be the amount that can be passed through is going to be capped. Now, we've had some discussion and data on the Southern California Edison and PG&E gas price indexes and what can be done by the updating, but you know, this has to work for the entire EIM. And we're not seeing any data that the gas price, where there is no index, where there is no ICE index, that we've got any data at all that shows that we're going to have good gas prices or have good prices now for those mitigation. And the CAISO design, you know, I think is intended to work for the whole EIM, not just the SoCal border trading hub. And the framework in which, you know, resource-specific thresholds could be adapted over time as we gain experience with what's going on at some of these trading points offer some flexibility to make this design work for the whole EIM and not just for a couple of trading points in California. I think we need to start moving in that direction, and the CAISO design may not be perfect, and I don't think it probably is the end state, but at least it's moving us toward the end state. Another issue that, you know, is sort of difficult for us to assess and we didn't talk about is the manual commitments. And we had some discussion of out of market commitments and ED and whether those should be mitigated or not. And we understand the CAISO has some, from the CAISO, they told us they have tools that allow the operators to mitigate, to understand whether there's competition. Department of Market Monitoring is, you know, points out that however, you know, do the operators have the time to apply those? And you know, we just can't make a judgment about that. You know, we think if it is a lot to expect the operators to apply ad hoc tools, and if it is too much, then maybe applying after the fact mitigation to the commitment costs would be appropriate with the flexibility that we're going to allow them at least recover their costs. And then as Ben talked about, the overall design, we think, in not mitigating resources that and committing them when there's no binding constraint will go a long ways towards dealing with the problems in the EIM where resources are being uneconomically committed and not able to recover their costs and there was no binding constraint and all they being some committed to support exports. And that's not a just and reasonable policy in the long run. So those were the, you know, talking, going a little beyond our original opinion. Of course, people have raised lots of issues that are beyond our opinion, so we haven't been able to talk about all of them. That's I'll stop there for now.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. Barbara and operator, we're, I think, ready now to take comments or questions from stakeholders.
All right. So once again, if you do have a question or comment, please press #2 on your telephone keypad at this time. And we do have a comment coming in. I'll go ahead and unmute that person. Caller, your line is unmuted.
Hi, this is Callie Wells for the Western Power Trading Forum. Scott, I appreciate that the discussion you just had with regards to the various thresholds. I was curious, your guys' opinion right now references the 200% default transition cap or bid cap on the commitment cost. So I was curious, how does your opinion change at all given the ISO's recent change to the proposal where that initial default cap is now at 150 rather than the 200%?
Well, if no one else wants to go, I don't think we've got any rocket science behind 150% or 200% or 175% as the initial step. I mean, all of those are moving in the right direction, and it'd be good. I support, you know, behind the opinion that we don't want to have a new 4-year stakeholder process to keep moving in that direction. The extent we can move it up to 300%, if there are no problems, that'd be good. But I don't think I'm not willing to say, oh, 150% is terrible and 200 is good. They're both moving in the right direction.
Okay, I appreciate that. Yeah, and I don't know anyone who wants to go through another 4-year stakeholder process to get to 300%. Thanks. And actually, I do have a second. Oh, sorry, Ben, what?
I was about to say, well, the stakeholder process has been fun, but I agree. As long as it's automatically going up to 300%, if they're not problems, then this is a transient. So it's for just a year and a half, and I don't have a strong opinion about whether the right number is 158% or 160.
Okay, and I did actually have a second question. It's more of a process question. So. Our comments on the second revised draft final proposal that just came out, the ISO kind of said this is our chance to make comments. Do you want me to wait until everyone else has their chance to comment on the opinion, and then are we going to move over into those comments?
So we're scheduled for an hour. I think that's what we're allowed. And If your comments aren't, you know, if they're relatively concise, you know, on the order of a handful of minutes, 2 to 4 minutes, that'd be fine. Otherwise, maybe we'll want to make sure everybody else gets through their comments and the opinion first.
Okay, no, I can make them really concise. Okay. So, I mean, I don't think it's much of a surprise, but WPTF was, you know, extremely disappointed to see that recent change from 200 to 150%. You know, and there seemed to be a lack of consideration for kind of some of the previous comments that were submitted on the last iteration, specifically the joint parties' comments. So we didn't realize that, you know, we needed to reiterate our position that we supported the move that the ISO made in the last proposal, which we thought was going to be the final one. So we just, you know, we're disappointed, but I think we agree that it's a step in the right direction. But obviously we would have rather seen the 200%.
Okay. Any other comments, Kelly?
No, I try to make those as concise as possible.
Oh, great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right. So, operator, ready to go on to any other folks who want to make a comment or ask a question?
All right. And we currently do not have anyone in the queue. Once again, you can press #2 on your telephone keypad, and we'll give a moment for that. All right. We have no one else entering the queue at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Marvin. So, at this point, I'll entertain a motion to adopt the opinion.
Scott, motion to adopt
the opinion.
I'll second.
Scott was first, so you get the honor of.
Okay.
And then Jim, I'm sorry. Next time you can respond more quickly and get that honor. Dr. Bushnell seconded. Okay, any modifications, corrections, or further discussion, Jim or Scott?
Nope.
Nope.
Okay, I think then we're ready to vote, so Scott?
Yes.
Okay, Jim?
Yes.
And I vote yes as well, so the opinion concerning commitment costs and default energy bid enhancements has been adopted without any changes, and the final version will be posted later. So that concludes the discussion of the opinion. In terms of future business, I'd just like to mention as a heads up that we are working on an opinion on the CRR Phase 1 proposed changes, and anticipate having a call sometime in mid-March on that subject. And then on Thursday, the first week of April, I believe that's the 5th, we are scheduled to have an in-person meeting in Folsom. And let me check to see if there's any other business or comments that my colleagues on the MSC would like to offer at this time. Hearing none?
I think you covered it.
Okay. Hearing none, then. Thank you to everybody for your attention and for your comments on the proposal itself, and Callie for your questions and comments now. And we look forward to talking to you all again in a couple of weeks. So at this point, Operator Marvin, we can conclude the call.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for joining today's teleconference. The call has now concluded, and you may disconnect.